Thanks again for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on this Saturday morning here on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Up next, a very interesting book from journalist Frank Burris. It's called The Geography of Madness, Penis Thieves, Voodoo Death, and the Search for the Meaning of the World's Strangest Syndromes. He investigates culture-bound syndromes and other aspects of life in the book. Frank, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I loved in the acknowledgement you say, how can you thank people who've helped you between the ages of 18 and 44? Because you've been working on this book for quite some time. Explain that.
Yeah, well, it's a book that's long in coming. I've been working on the book sort of steadily since 2005 when I went to Nigeria the first time. But the reason I figured out in writing the book that I was interested in things like penis stealing were because of some experiences that I had earlier as a young person going abroad. I was an exchange student right after high school, which is, you know, when I turned 18. I went to Italy, and it really shook me up, and really in ways that I kind of have been trying to understand since then. You know, and that was kind of the question in the book that runs through the book is, you know, what is this thing called culture, and how does it affect us, and, you know, to the extent that everybody around us could theoretically believe that your penis had been magically stolen, which is what happens in some cultures. And so that's kind of what that means. You know, it's a lifelong thing to try to understand how culture shapes us and shapes our worldview and makes us into the people we are, or doesn't, actually.
Well, you talk in the book about that trip to Italy and how you felt out of place in the new culture, and then came back home and felt out of place in the old culture too. And really, that was really what set you off on this journey.
Yeah. And that's, I think, fairly common to have reverse culture shock of people who go abroad and then come home, and all the things that used to be familiar seems so strange, and that used to be just assumptions are now no longer assumptions, and so you end up questioning everything, and you have to kind of decide what things you're going to keep and throw away. And for a young person, especially at 18, 19, that's a difficult process to go through.
So the thievery mentioned in the title, you mentioned this is a phenomenon that has happened in Nigeria and in other places where men become convinced, despite what even their doctors tell them, that their genitals have simply disappeared. And this is something that, while not prevalent or even anywhere on the screen here in the U.S., does happen in other cultures often.
Yeah, it does happen in other cultures. It's sort of, I mean, at some level, it's kind of every man's deepest fear. But, you know, you have this thing that I read about actually on the BBC around 2001, I think. I read a couple stories where people in Nigeria would feel like their genitals had been stolen magically, and what then happens is they look around for someone who looks like they did it, and that person gets blamed, and often that the blamed person will be killed by a mob, because very few people doubt that that's possible. And that was kind of what I was interested in, is how that works and what it's like to live in a place like that, and how when everybody believes something so strongly, it can become true in a way.
When you go in search of this phenomenon, I thought it was kind of amusing that you go looking and you can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, in Nigeria. Yeah. I mean, it's not super common. It happens in rashes, kind of, and it actually happens in. It seemed to have kind of come and go in 10-year cycles, which is a similar pattern to what happened in China, in southern China, on the island of Hainan. Every about 10 years throughout the 20th century, they would have these big waves of what's called this genital retraction syndrome, or Suoyang is the term in Mandarin that they use, where people in China, it's slightly different. It's not magic necessarily. It's people feeling like their genitals are going to be sucked into their body, and they'll die if that happens. And the last big epidemic there was in 1985, when I think about 5,000 people thought that their genitals were disappearing, and so it's that's the kind of there seems to be some sort of pattern where it comes and goes like that.
I'm speaking with Frank Burris, the author of The Geography of Madness, Penis Thieves, Voodoo Death, and The Search for the Meaning of the World's Strangest Syndromes. Details about the book at our website, WVXU.org. And, of course, the first thing that people would pop to mind is, oh, well, these are uneducated people. But you talk about the question of education when it comes to these cultural syndromes where you have the population with that strong a belief.
Yeah, and that kind of gets to a larger point. I mean, there is this kind of this assumption when we hear about these things in other cultures that, well, if they just saw things correctly like we do, none of this would happen. These are just sort of imaginary things, and whereas our mental conditions are real, actually. And by that, we usually mean they're sort of biochemical or physical or something along those lines. But, you know, when you kind of get into the weeds on these things and start looking at some of our syndromes, then you start to realize that our beliefs about the body and ourselves and the world also play a role in a lot of our own syndromes, if not all of them.
That was one thing that really got me thinking as I was reading The Geography of Madness, when you point to the United States and the high incidence of mental illness here, and you talk about the ethic of happiness and exploring depression and mental illness here in the U.S. and the higher rates than in other areas around the globe, and how it is our cultural syndrome that the ethic of happiness is what we feel and what makes us feel bad when we think we feel bad.
Right. Yeah, I mean, depression is a really good example. I mean, it does exist in every culture, just in some form. But it's different across cultures, and it occurs at different rates, and the symptoms are different, and all these sorts of things. For example, in our culture, when someone is depressed, they have low energy, they sort of can't get out of bed, and they feel unemotional about things, or they have low affect, it's called. But in Asian cultures, when someone has major depression, they have higher emotional reactivity, and the thinking is that because, you know, we consider happiness to be a normal thing, to be the normal state of being, and if you are not feeling happy, then you are feeling abnormal. And in Asian cultures, it's more moderation or control is kind of the norm, and so when somebody's feeling abnormal, they sort of act in this other way. You know, whether consciously or not, that's sort of a hard question to get at, but these symptoms differ across cultures. Like Korean and Korean Americans will have symptoms of depression like indigestion or heartburn or stiff joints or sore muscles, which, you know, we would not necessarily have. And it goes back to what you think is going on in your body and how those beliefs kind of affect the way you feel.
Well, I loved how you pointed out that for Russians, depression is a normal state of mind, and they're not bothered by it at all.
Right. If they feel bad, they don't feel like, oh, something's wrong with me. They just feel like, okay, this is life. And so they're less bothered by feelings of unhappiness than we are when we start to, people in our culture, you know, especially for a long time, you start to sort of panic and go, God, what's wrong with me? I'm not as happy as I should be, smiling all the time and enthusiastic, and, you know, that's not necessarily realistic.
Well, while we talked about that, you know, the question of education and looking down, they're not very well educated, so of course they would believe that someone could, you know, steal their genitals. But at the same time, you point out that the United States is the only country that has premenstrual syndrome as a disease in the medical journals.
Yeah. It's not the only country, but it differs again across cultures, and it's one of the only places where it's considered like an illness, I think, and especially in its extreme form, it's been even considered, it's called premenstrual dysmorphic disorder, which is in the DSM, which is the psychiatric manual, and there's not really that much evidence, there's really no biological evidence for that. It's sort of the way it got included is kind of haphazard. And but we all believe it. And even though when you start looking across cultures, you see how people have different symptoms, or in some cultures they only have, women only have the biological symptoms, the physical symptoms, not the emotional, psychological symptoms. And so, which is not to say, you know, again, that it's not real or that it's imaginary or that it's, it goes back to the meaning that we give these things. And in our culture, menstruation has kind of a bad meaning in some ways that people can sort of start to worry about, and can the expectation of effects can create those effects.
I'm speaking with Frank Burrows, the journalist, about his book, The Geography of Madness, Penis Thieves, Voodoo Death, and the Search for the Meaning of the World's Strangest Syndromes, and belief, and how strong our mind actually is. I love the section on placebos and nocebos, and how much your mind or what you believe about something can affect how that something affects you.
Right. Even to the point, in some cases, of death. I mean, there's, you know, you can come across all these cases where people, it used to be called a voodoo death or hex death or psychogenic death, where someone is cursed and told they're going to die at a certain time, and then they do die. And you know, I came across cases like this in the medical literature. There was one woman in 1967 who came into a hospital in Baltimore, and she was short of breath, and she was feeling bad and dizzy and nauseous, and nobody knew what exactly was wrong with her. And finally she told doctors that she had been born on Friday the 13th and delivered by a root worker, which is the religion brought by West African slaves and kind of mixed with native herbalism, and it still exists. But this woman had told her she would die before her 23rd birthday, and then she told the doctors that just before that, and then she died.
So that power of belief and what the mind can do, and not to get too personal here, but I found that power of the mind thing that works with my sleep. I read a book called The Secret Life of Sleep that made me realize Americans as a culture worry a lot about not getting enough sleep, and I've stopped worrying about that when I, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and I actually feel more rested. So I think,
right,
you know,
the worry about it can be worse than the fact of it, actually.
So what's the big lesson you took away from writing The Geography of Madness, Frank?
The big lesson, well, we're all crazy, first of all, to some extent.
Yes.
But also to I'm more mindful of my own beliefs and the kind of the stories that I feel like I'm part of, and the ways that I run my own story forward in time. You know, I kind of think about that a lot, and your sense of yourself and how, you know, who you are and what your story is something that's worth thinking about. And actually, there were some studies I read about writing about your own personal life and your personal story that can have these weird health effects, good positive health effects that they don't really know how they work. And so I think about those things, and I also think about the stories and the books and things that I read to my kids and what kind of life possibilities those are creating for them too.
So did you feel you benefited from sharing a bit of your story here in The Geography of Madness?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's really, I think, healthy in a lot of ways to kind of think about your own story and who you are and where you came from and what you believe and what the episodes are in your life that kind of made you into who you are. And that's one of the reasons why psychotherapy works. I mean, there's been a few of these big studies of all the kinds of psychotherapies, 400 or so different types, and they all work, but they all work exactly the same amount. And the thinking is that it has to do with this, with telling your story to someone, kind of trying to make sense of it, trying to find meaning in it, and that's really good for you to do.
Well, thank you for your time this morning, Frank, and thank you for the book and all the thought-provoking items you brought up in it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me. It was really fun.
Frank Burris. The book is The Geography of Madness, Penis Thieves, Voodoo Death, and the Search for the Meaning of the World's Strangest Syndromes. I know it sounds a little dry and medical, but it's kind of a mix of travel writing, medical history, and some anthropological exploration. You can find it where books are sold and learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7.